And welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 912 on a Thursday morning. Beautiful radiant sunshine out there. It's a nice day. The weatherman calling for highs today in the 50s for a lot of the region. Sunshine, beautiful. Reason to be optimistic. That'll soon end. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe. Alan Shartok is here, and I want to reiterate that. Alan Shartok is here. There was some question about whether I introduced him yesterday, which of course I did.
You know what I love about this station, about this show? We talk about heavy, heavy subjects.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, something, you know, will happen like, did you or did you not introduce me?
Right.
And then we'll get 17 letters on that subject.
We went back to the tape, and of course I did. I did my job, and I'll do it again, sir. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, who is the director of something or other at UAlbany.
Journalism.
And editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stu Shinsky, is here. It's an all-star panel. You can join the panel by emailing us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
We always love it when Shinsky's here, except that...
I think Rosemary does.
He's a little tall.
Rosemary.
Are you trying to sow discontent?
That's what I try to do early in the program.
Who are these short people, Ray?
Shinsky, well played.
You sowed the discontent.
Speaking of hurling invectives.
We're short, but we're biters.
You are.
As he moves closer to the Republican nomination, Donald Trump is looking to convince voters that he can master the role of commander-in-chief, saying it's time to, quote, shake the rust off America's foreign policy. He delivered his first formal foreign policy speech yesterday to a group of conservative experts and writers in Washington, telling them that his goal is peace and prosperity, not war and destruction. Trump said his goals can be achieved through a disciplined, deliberate, and consistent foreign policy, but that President Obama and Hillary Clinton, he put those two together very often in the speech, have delivered one that is reckless, rudderless, and aimless. He says America first will be his overriding theme. Now, the TV channel, the news channels, and even on the AP, the copy here that I'm reading, are quick to note that the Republican frontrunner used a teleprompter.
Well, and that becomes the issue.
He
makes a big deal about it, especially Barack Obama using it. And he always points out that I'm speaking here, you know, right off the top of my brilliant head. So he deserves that criticism.
Really?
He has used it before when he spoke to the Jewish lobbying group. He also used a teleprompter.
And that's not okay? They all do.
I don't care if he does or not.
Sinatra did it at the end.
Even with the teleprompter, his speech was just... Silly, there was nothing to it. Trust me, I'm going to beat ISIS. I have a secret plan. We don't want to surprise anybody, but we do want to surprise people. We're not going to tell you what it is, but I'm going to beat ISIS. We're going to love our allies better than we ever have before, although we are going to make them pay for NATO, and we're going to kick them out if they don't. It was filled with contradictions and weirdness
and
vagary.
Is it an act? I mean, who is the real Trump?
Well, aren't they all acting? All candidates acting?
Well, they are.
Except for maybe Bernie?
The bombastic Trump is the guy that attracted followers and repelled people. And now you have he seems to be expanding his sort of presence.
Well, isn't that what he has to do?
He has to. And as Alan often says, to get that middle, you know, he has to sort of draw those folks in to basically say, I'm not the extreme guy you think I am, Republican Party. Get behind me so we can have a nice, smooth convention.
Alan, you haven't said anything in a moment.
Well, if I say something, somebody says he's talking too much.
Right.
If I don't say anything, they say he's not talking.
We'll try it. Let's see if
you're introduced today.
At least Ray did that.
Well, say something.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Something.
You're talking too much.
No, I thought trying to project myself, which is very hard for Rosemary,
ouch.
And when my 2-year-old grandson hits his head, he always say, ouchie.
All right, well, moving
on. Oh, yeah, okay.
You've said nothing of substance in 3 minutes.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I admit that. Okay, so I thought projecting myself into the middle to take a look at this speech. It wasn't bad.
Ugh.
No, it wasn't bad. Because what they've done is to figure out what everybody wants.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
What? Oh, you want peace and prosperity? We're going to give you peace and
you
prosperity.
You want the presidential tone? Here it is.
You want to know that we'll beat our enemies into the ground if we have to? I'm not telling them when I'm coming, but I'm coming.
Yeah.
And we're not going to be indecisive about this. The last thing you want to be is indecisive. And I'm decisive. So if I'm in the middle And I'm saying, okay, does this guy make any sense in terms of what he's saying? The answer is yes,
but
he does.
The timing I find interesting. Did he have to give a foreign policy speech today? Yesterday? It seemed to me short on actual detail.
I think the timing is directly correlating to we're running out of primaries because we've done most of them, and here comes that convention where his butt is on the griddle one way or the other. So he's got to start that appeal to get that bigger bridge.
And Stu, you're exactly right, but every once in a while you have to show that a little presidential.
Yes.
You know, and I think that this, as you say, this is the presidential time to say, okay, I can handle the foreign policy for you, and that's why I'm using a teleprompter.
He showed little presidential, I think. Somebody asked me today, do you think the American people are so stupid they don't see what's going on? And you've just said from the middle he looked pretty good. So, sorry.
But what is going on for those of us who are too stupid? Tell us what's going on.
It was an empty speech. There was nothing. I mean, if you listen to any expert talk about it, and they are talking about it, saying pulling
your hair out. Yes, a non-biased Madeleine Albright, of course.
No, I didn't listen to Madeleine. Yeah. I don't know what she said about it.
But, she didn't like it.
Jerry says, by the way, Jerry Roden said that the streaming isn't working.
Good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Just before I got on the air, I got a call from engineering. We'll go back to Rosemary's point in a minute.
Yes. Rosemary, I forgot it.
She's very important.
We have to. No, well, it's Madeleine Albright and some of the criticisms of the speech. And we'll get back to that in a minute. But this is housekeeping. Our audio streams are down. The trouble ticket is in. It is not our engineering department checked it. It is not our encoders. It's not here. Trouble ticket is in with NPR. Should be fixed soon. So hang in there. Meantime, you can listen to us by going to the video stream. So if you want to do that, and then you get to look at Rosemary shake her head and shoot daggers at Alan, which is always fun. If you go to WAMC.org, click live video, it's a good alternate audio stream. So anyway, Madeleine Albright.
Yeah, this was not a nice thing. This was not a good speech. Is it meant for who's the audience? And Alan is right. It's intended for people going to the convention, for Republicans who want to be reassured that they're idiot candidate is viable, but as foreign policy, oh my gosh, how do you warm up to your enemies? To your allies, and insist that they pay their full share in NATO. How do you wipe out ISIS while at the same time you're bringing peace and prosperity? Those things don't go together.
He did contradict.
It's completely full of contradictions.
And the German foreign minister did point out the contradictions. However, the base, certainly the base of his supporters would say, well, what is illogical about making the NATO members pay their way?
They never have.
And that's not a good answer.
NATO is not for them so much as it is for us. Come on.
Really?
Same with the UN. Why do we need money from them? We have the resources. We need the cover of other people who support us, who let us use their land for bases. We've never needed money from other countries. Not for our own defense, our own national security. That's what NATO does.
Well, he seems to be pitching this isolationism.
Yes, that's exactly right. We are building the wall, too. That's
we're building the wall.
Which he did not mention yesterday, by the
way. No, he did mention that in many speeches.
No, not during
the
foreign policy.
Not as part of the speech, not in the speech itself, yeah.
Well, yeah, isolationism has always been a big part of what presidential people have said. Let us not forget that FDR, Woodrow Wilson, two of the biggest wars we have ever engaged in, the biggest war.
Sprang out of isolationism.
Well, but the presidents, until the day the troops got on the boat, were talking about isolationism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reference to America First that Trump used, there's the historic
context.
That's
a very old slogan. Yeah.
Historic context back into pre-Pearl Harbor, where that was Charles Lindbergh's approach, and then Pearl Harbor dragged America in, and there's also some anti-Semitic revelations with that America First back in the early 1940s.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yes.
Yeah. Ray, you know, one of the problems with what we do here is we're in a sort of a conundrum. We are being deluged with people who listen to us online and who are writing to us about not being able to hear us
and
online.
We're working on that.
Yes, and then they want us to tell them what's happening,
but they can't hear us. Right.
Don't you understand?
Shout loudly, listen on the video feed for the time being.
But they can't hear you say that.
Right, no, I get it. That's why I yelled.
They're in Australia listening to us.
Yeah, okay. The email address, if you want to weigh in, is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Send your complaints, your nasty grams. Let's take a break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable, 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe. It's the Roundtable panel, and a cracking good panel it is. The Poughkeepsie Journal editor, Stu Shinsky, is here. Director of the Journalism Department at UAlbany, it's Rosemary Armeo, and the program. It's not the department, it's the program.
It's smaller than a department.
It's the journalism program. We'll change that in the script. Alan Shartok, who is the director of Everything We Hold Dear, is here as well.
You'd never know it from the kind of abuse I have to take on this panel.
The email address is roundtable@wamc.org if you'd like to get your shot in at Alan. Do we have any email?
Oh, yeah, we've got some. Okay. And Lisa writes this. Wasn't sure if you realized it, but your app isn't working.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. We're working on that. NPR is on the case.
John
says. In a couple
of
weeks, they'll have it done.
What the heck is going on here?
He's
you see, I'm pressing
right,
the thing.
Okay, but, well, we'll send this one right to the Museum of Broadcasting.
Wait. We have important letters here. Wait, hold on a second. Luca says, Dear Ray, has Alan apologized to you for falsely accusing, not mentioning his honor's name at the beginning of yesterday's program?
Oddly enough, he has not apologized, even though I played him the tape yesterday. He walked away and said something which I can't repeat. So, no, I would say he has not apologized.
Okay, here's actually a substantive one. Robert came through. Panel, so if our European allies don't pay enough, America will put its military out of their countries and aim missiles where better-paying friends prefer.
Right.
That's a great strategy for a business. But for the most powerful country in the world, it's a formula for encouraging Russian adventurism and small border wars throughout the Balkans.
Excellent letter. I couldn't have said it better. In fact, I didn't say
it better myself. Okay.
Judy says, hi, friends.
Hi.
One of you just referred to Bernie as being the only presidential candidate who's not an actor. Are you kidding me? He's the best of them all. As Marx, parenthesis, Groucho, said, if you can fake sincerity, you've got it made.
You betcha.
And Tony says, on the Trump speech, hope and change?
Yeah, that was another vague and... Absolutely. Turns out illusionary kind of message. Yeah. We Americans keep going for someone who's going to blow up the old system and bring a whole new different thing. And we elect people who are outsiders. Let's for once put in an experienced, knowledgeable
person.
Okay, all
right, person. Hang on. What outsiders
have
we elected?
Several...
The former senator?
Oh, come on, Obama.
Yes, he was a senator.
How long was he
a
senator? 15 minutes or so?
He had a cup of coffee or two.
He was a community organizer and then a senator, and that's
about it. Yeah, he was in Congress for a cup of coffee or two.
But don't forget, there's a little issue of Congress.
What'd you say?
There's this little issue of Congress. You could elect Superman, but he's going to need people like police departments.
Yeah.
You can't do it yourself as president because of the gridlock in
that.
Well, you don't want a dictator. That's what the Constitution is there for.
Well, we political scientists...
Oh, here we go.
Go for it.
Every once in a while, I'll talk about the concept of realigning elections.
Yes.
Realigning elections. This one promises to be a potential realigning election in which the Democrats take the Senate, in which case that would make a big difference.
I would say it does not promise. It perhaps might happen. The Democrats, I would not promise that the Democrats take the Senate.
I would. I reject that entirely.
Really?
Promises. It depends on who's doing the talking. In my case, it promises. In your case, it's possible.
Oh, I see. Because you've been right most of the time. That's a good point.
Quite often.
Yes.
Okay. Peter says...
Let's roll the tape back.
Peter says, okay, so close to home, how do you feel the presidential candidates might stand on public radio and arts funding?
Mm. Democrats pro, Republicans con.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. We do know that the people in the House of Representatives, the Republicans, tried to knock NPR out, NPR funding. As you remember, Reagan, just so I want everybody to remember this, didn't like NPR, allegedly said, and I only know that this is what hit the thing, was that he thought NPR was news from Managua.
Yeah.
So meaning left. So... You know, I think, and then even people like Chris Gibson here, and the Republicans voted against it. Who do you think sitting on these boards of these, you know, hoity-toity public television stations and Kilbarney? I think it's a very risky thing to do. However, I can tell you this, as the CEO of this particular organization, if all the money, and it's a lot of money, you know, like $500,000, $40,000 goes away from WAMC, we will make it. But I don't think that's true of most of the public radio stations in the country. I think they'll be in real trouble, you know, real trouble, because many of them live on it, but they don't have people in all news chiefs in all of these places and everything else.
I mean, there is the argument to be made, and they sometimes make it with regard to the arts, that when the government supports the arts, not necessarily a good thing for the arts.
Why?
Well, there's always that.
Because they call the tune.
Well, they may call the tune, but also if the government supports the arts, there'll be those people who say, you know, then we don't have to give.
Real support of the arts means no strings attached. I mean, the church supported the arts for years and years, and there were strings attached, couldn't show naked figures and
yeah.
things.
Well, you got the Sistine Chapel out of it, right?
Yes, you did.
That worked out
so
pretty well.
So it did work. I think the more money for arts and radio and the less for things like walls and missiles is a very good thing.
Okay.
Miguel wants
to
know.
Sounds like a hope and change sort of thing to say. Well done.
Does.
Miguel has a very good analytical question. He says, is the live streaming down?
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. Hey, people, tell your friends, those who might listen online, give them a call and say, look, there is a little issue with either Limelight or NPR. They are working on it. And you can always listen via our video stream, which has a nice secondary audio.
Apparently, it is NPR. That's what I'm seeing.
That's what we're,
I'm seeing that. Mm-hmm. Okay. AZ says, Trump. America first, why not? Charity begins at home. I would think the Germans think Germany first, as do France, French, for France first. France first. Why should any nation compromise the welfare of its citizens to the advantage of another nation?
Well, that
it
makes
is not
perfect
to
sense.
The advantage mm-hmm. of other to other nations for us to
but
have.
But don't
a
you take care of your own backyard first? Yeah, you have to. You have to agree with that, right?
I don't. If that means defunding NATO or weakening it because others are not paying or the UN, that is not
to take
care
how,
of, your own, of yourself.
It's amazing
first.
How everyone becomes hawks when this comes up. All right, let's take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo's here. She's in fine form. Stu Shinsky, good too. Alan, meh, we'll be back. We'll see how it goes in the second half. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 933. It's a Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe. We have Alan Shartok here, Rosemary Armeo, and Stu Shinsky of the Poughkeepsie Journal. Before we get to letters, Stu, what's new in the paper?
Well, we've got a couple of things I want to mention real quick. Today's paper, we have a story about what is just a growing trend, and that's threats in public schools. We had an incident where a note was found in a school. They quickly put the school on a hold position where no one could leave classrooms. They made an arrest. A young girl was arrested on charges of making a terroristic threat. This is happening more and more often, not only in our area, but nationwide.
So what do you do if you're a news outlet? Given the propensity for copycats, do you report this? And we have this discussion in the newsroom as well. These things happen all the time in our listening area.
We if it's a isolated incident, we typically will have to evaluate it case by case. This was a high school. This meant parents were alerted. This meant that busing, they closed the school early. We had an incident at Marist College a few months ago where a Twitter threat was received. They locked down the college. Kids couldn't leave their dorm. Professors were told to stay away from the campus. These threats, this is the legacy of Columbine, where these things happen so often now. So we have that in the paper today about the arrest of a 17-year-old who made this threat. But the larger issue is this is everywhere.
And but the larger issue is framed by Ray. Is it appropriate to encourage copycatting by reporting on it? And, you know, you guys are reporters, so you do that.
We can't ignore what happened.
Yeah.
And what we do is we spent a lot of time yesterday and the day before dispelling rumors.
And now that there are so many avenues of getting the word out, Twitter, Facebook, whatever,
texting.
It's the difficult. In the old days, if a kid wanted to get out of a test, you leave a note or you make a call.
And it was typically a Friday or a Monday.
Pull the fire alarm.
And it was also, gee, I don't want to go to school today. It's such a nice day. But these are actual threats, and they took a while to file an actual criminal charge, but the charge was, you know, basically making a terroristic threat. It's a felony.
Well, if a kid comes home early, the mother or the father are going to want to know why the kid came home early. If Roselle hears a fire engine in Great Barrington, she wants to know where the fire is or was.
But a felony, terroristic threat, I mean, doesn't that sort of teach kids that authority is out of whack and not to be trusted? That's not a realistic charge.
What we were told was that they determined there was no real danger to the students. But from the police side, we also were told that if these things are not treated seriously, that's something that...
The one time that it's real, then you're in trouble.
Right. And if
you that's a public relations move, though. It doesn't have to do with... That's a child that needs to be disciplined, instructed. You charge him with a felony, that's going to do it?
And that's what the court system will deal with.
That's treating...
The police felt there was enough to charge.
This is like that zero tolerance stuff, so schools lose all sense of balance, and kids with a tiny little pocket knife that a mother gives them as a birthday present is expelled. You know, it's craziness like that. Can we just have some common sense in this? You can take things seriously and not go overboard.
Still, having a pocket knife, I totally agree with you about that. Calling it a threat, even in 30, 40, 50 years ago, not really a good thing
to do. But they didn't charge it with a felony third. If you called in a bomb threat to a school, you didn't get charged with terrorism. Come on, that's an internet. Yeah, that's like an international.
This is the Columbine era. This is where movie theaters get shot up. This is where kids. I mean, last week there was a school shooting in the Midwest, I believe it was. I mean, this happens. So then, even the threat is they are reacting and frankly reacting very proactively.
Okay. Anything else in the paper?
Sunday.
What's Beetle Bailey doing?
Well, he and Mort Walker are hanging out with Sarge. And
good.
Well,
good.
He's never been released from the military service.
Well,
Beetle Bailey.
You see,
after 80 years,
career military man.
And Dagwood still has those little puppies running around, and the kids are still 6, 15, and
eating those sandwiches.
So things don't change. In some of them, they grow older. Yeah. Gasoline Alley, they grow older.
Gasoline. I apologize for leading us down this
path. But they don't die.
Anything else, Stu, before we get to the letters?
Real quickly, on Sunday, we have an interesting piece that pits development versus history. Down in Fishkill, in southern Dutchess County, by Route 84, there is a plan to build a tourist center and retail shops. And it happens to be on land that George Washington used as an encampment during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
And there's a big controversy about whether this land is sacred. There's a lot of back and forth about how there might be buried soldiers on this property. The developer says, no, we've done incredibly in-depth tests. So this is a controversy. We'll have the full story in Sunday's Poughkeepsie Journal.
Well, you name it the George Washington Mall, right?
I was thinking of
Continental Commons, actually, is the name of it.
Continental Commons. I like it. Got to cross the Delaware to get to the food court. It's nice.
Yes.
So, all right, what do you got, Alan?
Okay, well, there are plenty of things. Gunner says, hiring, Gunner says, doesn't Rosemary's earlier comment that we should spend more on funding arts and public media and less on missiles an idea I support contradict her seemingly adamant commitment to NATO, one of the biggest users of American missiles? This is from Gunner, by the way. I am by no means a Trump supporter, but it seems it's now acceptable to form our opinions based upon mere opposition to anything Trump says.
I think our budget can take on both NATO, which is an extremely effective defense mechanism for the United States, and arts. We might, for example, get a few dollars out of ending wars in Iraq and the Middle East, where we have not been effective at all.
Manny says, I agree with Rosemary. Some kids threw rocks through a few of our neighborhood windows and he was charged with felony misdemeanor. Getting drunk and being an idiot is not a felony misdemeanor.
Depends on what you do.
We really enjoy all of your brilliant minds, says Liz. I'm wondering if you can imagine a time when Trump abandons the gender card. Thanks, Liz from Amherst. Have I ever told you how much I love Amherst?
No.
It's one of my favorite places in the world.
Yeah. Huh. Why?
That woman card thing is really interesting. I think Trump is throwing up a whole lot of things to see what sticks, like he did with Little Marco. He played with all kinds of other criticism first. And it's counterproductive, I think. I think a lot of women are, even if they don't support Hillary, they don't like the attacks on women.
Taylor says, I propose that WMC produce a new show or podcast called Was That a Shot?
I love that. I love that.
Consisting purely of Alan and Ray bickering. It would be huge.
That's called the fun drive.
That is a brilliant idea.
And so Paul says, so how is it that the same people who put America first are the same ones who want to dismantle Social Security, welfare, affordable right. health care, food stamps, and any other social programs, yet that is exactly how you put corporations first?
American corporations. Well, now, to be fair,
Trump hasn't talked about dismantling Social Security.
No, he hasn't.
No, but it's some of the people who are in his party have. That's for darn sure.
Well, they're not all saying America first.
Was that a
shot? They
might
think that. No, that was not a shot. That was a...
Okay. That is true, though. Trump actually has supported Social Security.
Jamie says, Trump reading the RNC foreign policy off the teleprompter was like the words would not come out of his mouth. He seemed to be unfamiliar with sentences that end with periods. And as for the content, I think if you asked him 5 minutes later what he said, he would have no clue. And as for those who say we feared... the thought of a Reagan administration at this point in the election cycle and it turned out okay did not. No matter how delusional the RNC's memory may be, we are still suffering from the Reagan administration from this day. Jamie, my position, just in terms of analysis, is it ain't whether we did well or not. It's whether people believe we did well, which they do, number one, and whether our party, and it's not my party, but whether our party can win the election. Using this guy, which is one of the things that confuses me the most about all of this. It seems to many people that Trump is now in a position to win the election, that there's a possibility he could win.
Yep.
Now, if he could win, why are these Republicans, the other guys, so adamantly opposed to a Trump run?
Because they don't control him.
They also don't think he's a real Republican.
Right. Is he embodying the principles of the good old GOP?
Good old GOP, which is going down the garden path. I mean, you know, at this stage of the game, there's so many more Democrats. Hillary is the presumed winner. I believe that if anybody, if it's Cruz or these other people, Hillary's going to beat him into the ground. Whereas Trump is we don't know about Trump. And the analysis, an analogy to Reagan is exactly right. We don't know how popular this guy is going to turn out to be. And Jeffrey and CB says, no, we're not doing that one because it's not on topic for today.
Okay.
The problem with saying who can disagree with saying that I'm going to put America first is that it assumes that our current president and all before him have not put America first. Of course they have. And of course Obama puts America first. He's simply far more aware of the dynamics of the world situation and our relationships than this simpleton who smiles when he gets applause and says, thank you, feeding from his vast narcissism. We have to put America first. We have to. We just have to. What a fool. That's from Jeffrey. Michael says, I visited the FDR Museum in Hyde Park last week. I was surprised about how relevant this was to today's politics. Huh. I learned that the use of the words like conservative, liberal in the modern political lexicon dates back to the New Deal. Those that opposed it were deemed conservative. Those who were for it deemed liberal. Many changes people take for granted. The societal changes the New Deal brought, such as Social Security, banking reform, and fair labor standards. Okay. And then it goes on, but too long. Okay. The government support for the arts in Germany, says Marjorie, meant that Saarbrücken, where I sang for years, a town about the size of Springfield, had a full-staffed opera company, a theater company, a dancing company, two separate orchestras, one for the opera and also a radio orchestra. The audience was also often filled to capacity. The directors and conductors had a great deal of freedom. People went to the theater because they could afford it, and we worked there, paid by the state, had a 12-month contract, 6 weeks holiday. Okay. Please consider making... Oh, no, I'm not going to read that one. Okay.
What happened?
They want you... It was a... You know, there are always some people who want to take shots. And in this case, the shot was at Joe, which is totally inappropriate. He does a wonderful job with the show and, you know...
Let's just give the email address. It's roundtable@wamc.org. Please no shots. Alan is feeling very fragile today.
Yes,
roundtable@wamc.org. You know, Ted Cruz picked Carly Fiorina yesterday. Big news.
Big news.
Donald Trump said Cruz can't win. What's he doing picking vice presidents? However, what is the strategy?
Well, Rosemary said something that was interesting. I think it was Rosemary about California, didn't you?
Yeah, she I think that's part of her appeal for Cruz is that she's a California native.
And
so
a
that's
woman.
Her, and a woman. So it's balancing and it's...
It's about the Trump on the woman's side.
Yeah. However, she didn't win in California when she ran for Senate against Barbara Boxer, who is a a strong and liberal Democrat. So I'm not sure...
But again, that doesn't really matter in the primary unless it's an open primary. And I'm not sure about California yet. Maybe one of our astute listeners can tell us,
in fact.
I'm
sure they'll let us know. I have to agree with Donald Trump on this one. I think Cruz is wasting his time.
I think Ted Cruz has to do anything he can.
You know, I see it the other way. I see it the other way. I see Fiorina using Cruz.
In what way?
As a stepping step for future placement
office.
In this national discussion.
She now gets to add to her resume. She
That's
was
right.
one of the, what I guess, the second woman to run for national office.
I just wonder, because, I mean, if Cruz really thinks he's going to take this convention, okay, fine. He's getting his eggs lined up. But is Fiorina, what does
That's
Fiorina
good.
Have? Does she really think he's going to beat, that Cruz is going to beat Trump? I think Fiorina is really in this for herself.
Very interesting.
Oh, you're probably right.
Good observation.
Okay, we have a major piece of news.
Okay.
Just coming in over the line.
All right, sir.
From Josh. The live stream is back on.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Hello.
Hello to our friends listening online.
Good to see you out there.
You didn't miss anything important.
And the same from Jerry. It's amazing. And like that, Democrat count committees. I listen to most of your programs every day, and over the past week I've not heard much of news or commentary. Read Bill de Blasio's alleged involvement with progressive candidates like Celia Kacic or Hayes Clement. Are my candidates dipping into the swill of stinky campaign financing? I'd like to hear y'all discuss this local issue. I believe we have. As you know, the whole issue here is that we have these two separate stupid things where you can give any amount of money to the party committee, and then the party committee can give it to the Senate candidates or anybody else that they want. And also the rule where is if there's an outside group, they can raise all the money they want, but they can't do it coordinated with the campaign. And if you believe that, let's have a dance around the maypole. You know, I mean, it's sort of
dance around
nonsense.
The maypole.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Not really.
We dance around the maypole at my house this
really?
Weekend, by the way. Yeah, you're invited.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
May 1st is coming.
Yeah.
Pole dancing
Sunday.
At Rosemary's house. That's wonderful.
And Lee says, love the brevity he imposes on the music interludes, throwing us addicted listeners back into the fray.
Ah, well, I love the music. Today, Rob was playing Jerry Mulligan, fine Barry sax player of yesteryear.
Oh, seriously, folks, I'm sure you think all this repartee is cute. But you're all sounding more and more like Republican debates where everyone is sniping at each other. Get on with it.
Yeah, really.
Respectfully disagree if the topic dictates. Set an example of how it should be done. And that's from Denise.
You know
I'm
what, Denise?
I'm always amazed at
and
these
the
letters because I who say, stop sniping, stop bickering. Because it's like we get excited and talk over each other.
Yes.
We're getting a lot of commentary
all.
On
it. Yeah.
Viewpoints from many angles. I don't take it as bickering.
Yeah.
Even
no.
when I'm not on the show, I never take it as bickering.
Well, you don't listen when you're not on,
but
right?
You know,
actually, I listen a lot.
Really?
I listen online. I can't listen live because I'm at work. But I listen at night a lot. Yeah.
We do know that we do know that this is now one of the most popular shows, if not the most popular show on WMC. This first hour of Roundtable.
Well, with Alan, I mean, clearly.
Did I say that?
No.
That was a shot.
That was a shot. Ding, ding, ding. We have a little bell. The duck will come down and give you $50. Let's take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Yeah, we're pretty much wasting another hour here. We'll be back.
Oh, my God.
Shout out of guns.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is 9:51 almost on a Thursday morning. Ray is in for Joe. Alan is here. Rosemary Stushinsky. Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign says it plans to lay off hundreds of field staffers and other aides. Campaign spokesman Michael Briggs says the campaign will have gone from a staff of more than 1,000 in January to around 325, 350. He says there has been a shift in focus to the June 7th California primary.
Take it, Rosemary.
This fits in with our discussion yesterday.
Well, I mean, it is a little sad. He did a remarkable thing. He did went much further than anybody ever thought he would, much like Trump, to a different conclusion. I would like to have seen him said, yeah, we're winding down. This is a man who ran on integrity and truth, and he's saying, well, you know, we're getting rid of people in the states that have already had the primaries. We don't really need them anymore. And that's just simply not the case. He's winding down because his campaign is winding down, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the campaign is winding down, and they've raised a lot of money. You know, these it's amazing how much money has been raised by the Bernieites. They really have given $27.
I don't think those are the people he's letting go, though. He kept all his national staff. All the fundraising is at that level.
But you know that the end game is almost here, because if things were going really well, he would retain those 600 and say, okay, you're working on the general election campaign now. In a rally yesterday, he said he intends to put together the strongest progressive agenda that any political party has ever seen and take it to the Democratic convention. I got to say,
that's good.
If he is, in fact, moving to that mode, he is playing this in a pitch-perfect way.
Yeah, his message.
He's a pitch-perfect way?
Yeah. I think so.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I said pitch-perfect. Don't you think?
I mean,
I like it. Yeah.
Key. Pitch. It's a baseball pitch. Perfect.
Did you guys see the New York Times? I think it's today in the science section. Texting and driving.
Yes.
Watch out for the textilizer.
Yeah.
Now, this is from our...
Scary.
This is from our own New York State government. Felix Ortiz.
Well, bipartisan support for this measure.
Well, let me just say, Felix Ortiz, who we've had on the show on the Capital Connection, he's a genius at coming up with things that eventually get done.
Really?
You know, he's very smart. And he comes up with this stuff. And we know that the number of crashes is going up.
Now, roughly 8%.
Distracted driving.
Now, I have a Prius, which has 12, somebody told me we had 12 separate computer systems in it. It has this big thing that you look at where, you know what road you're on and all that. And I have to tell you that one should never look at those things. And they know it. Because every time you turn it on, they warn you not to look at it.
Driverless cars. That's what we need.
So why is it there?
Well, according to the New York Times, the idea, and I'll quote, is to give police officers a new device that is the digital equivalent of the breathalyzer, a roadside test called the textalyzer. It would work like this. An officer arriving at the scene of a crash could ask for the phones of any drivers involved and use the textalyzer to tap into the operating system to check for recent activity.
Like I'm for it.
You're for it?
I'm for it.
They say that you won't be able to read any text or actual messages. It would be some sort of app that would simply show you whether it had been used at all. But I do not believe that. I'm a little worried. I don't want anybody who has access to my phone, including my kids.
Well, and then how do you decide if it's the driver's phone or if it's the kid in the back seat using the phone?
Exactly.
I mean,
the various phones can be...
I mean, as soon as you see the red lights, if you're texting, you put that phone under your seat and go, what?
The ACLU, and again, quoting the New York Times, quoting Donna Lieberman, executive director of the New York chapter of the ACLU, says, it really invites police to seize phones without justification or warrant.
Right. Correct.
And
you and Rosemary are probably on the same side on this.
Well,
I'm not in favor of more police powers at this particular time.
I am. If it cuts down on the death rate, I'm for it.
Really?
Driverless cars will cut down on the death rate.
Yeah,
well, we'll
so
decide
fast.
About that.
Then you
that
can text as much as you want.
That's right, when we get there. But right now, Rosemary, now we know the death notices are going up.
Yeah.
And therefore
I have some questions about this. Can you pick up your phone when you're at a red light or when you're stalled on the Northway and you can't move? Yeah, can you be arrested for that?
I think you have to be in park, right?
If you are, I think the way the DWI law works, if you are in the driver's seat, you in essence are in play for a potential DWI, even if the car is sitting still.
Wow. Okay, what happens if you pick up your phone while you're driving and you plug it in? That's not texting, but you are touching your phone. Can you be arrested for
it
that?
It depends on the technology.
Or fined for that?
And it's not just texting. What about email? What about these other apps?
Well, no,
what about,
I think that's all included.
I think it's anything with
and
the
again,
keys.
Again, I'll quote this piece, and it's a great piece. We'll credit the author, Matt Richel, in the New York Times today. The bill's authors say they have based the textalizer concept on the same, quote, implied consent legal theory that allows the police to use the breathalyzer. When drivers obtain a license, they are consenting in advance to a breathalyzer, or else they will risk the suspension of their license.
Yeah, I
I'm
have
for
no,
it.
I have no problem with breathalyzer, and in theory, this is okay.
What about sobriety checkpoints?
I don't want anybody. Yeah, that's fine with
really?
Me, too.
That's okay, yes. too? Because there was
yeah,
a question when
a
they started
interest.
In the 80s.
I think that's in the
well,
public interest.
Well, wouldn't this be in the public interest as well?
It is. The rest of my sentence is, if you can assure me that you cannot get in to see what I'm texting, I have no problem with trying to prevent these accidents.
What is one life worth, Rosemary, Ray?
Not the invasion.
Now, I know you're playing devil's advocate.
No.
You are indeed.
No, I'm for this.
So you're for any abrogation of one's rights in favor of safety. Didn't Ben Franklin say something about that?
Ben Franklin has said something about almost everything.
Ah, well
So
played.
You have the governor who has an enemy, say, and he sends the state police to stop that guy's car and go through his email.
Yeah, yeah, you got a good
say,
point there.
Yeah.
It's
a terrible idea.
You have a good point there.
It's going to come to the technology.
Do you really think that?
Absolutely.
That this governor would
do
stop
such a thing?
Well, wait, this isn't the governor yet.
Car? And have him his phone examined for anti-Andrew remarks?
On.
Do you think that?
He might have your head examined, but
I don't
not
want
phone.
Him to have even the possibility of the power to do
okay,
that.
Okay, well, we have to stop there.
I hear you.
Oh, no.
I know that you're just getting into it, Rosemary, and I admire your can-do attitude. Stu Shinsky, well done. How about
well
those
done,
Mets?
Stewie.
How about those Mets?
Beautiful. It's
good
a wonderful
to see you guys.
Thing.
Thanks
Go
for
Mets.
Having me.
Yeah, and Alan Chartok, okay. We post all of our segments online.
That was a shot.
We post all of our segments online at WAMC.org/roundtable. All segments, and I want to underline this, including the roundtable panel conversation, will be posted by 1 p.m. Okay? Don't call today.
Why does it take so long?
Don't ask the question.
Because it's
by
not over yet. The
1 p.m.
show is only over at 12 o'clock.
We're very verbose.
All right. Roundtable WAMC.org. Is it too early to leave, Rob? Because
no.
I really want to.
He'll play Lionel Hampton playing the vibes.
We're out of here.